welcome back to the podcast, Against All Gods, the 10 Plagues in Exodus. My name's Todd. I'm one of the pastors at First Family, and this 10-set podcast, or 10-episode podcast, is designed to look at the 10 plagues that were listed in Exodus and were performed against the Egyptians. We are in this part of our study in our series through Exodus, and so I thought, since we're not really covering every plague in detail in our 2 weeks in this section, I wanted to bring some more detail and insight into the 10 plagues, especially regarding the fact that this is Yahweh's move against the gods of Egypt. It's his moment in which he showcases his supremacy and superiority, his divine authority. And so we've been doing that in this subset of podcasts called Against All Gods. It's really rooted out of Exodus chapter 12, verse 12. The Bible there says this, "I am the Lord. I will execute judgments against all the gods of Egypt." And I believe that was given, of course, during the 10th plague. And it was a reminder and a understanding that what they just witnessed and what they were experiencing, really, it was aimed at that religious and deity system that was so false and wrong. And Yahweh's now proving himself to be the God of gods, the Lord of lords, the King of kings, and he's delivering his people. We come now to plague number 6, and I mentioned on the last episode, of course, that this one gets under the skin. Well, it's because it was the plague of boils, and it's listed in Exodus chapter 9, well, about 5 verses there between verses 8 and 12. And this one is distinct because the first 5 plagues targeted Egypt's environment. They went after its economy, religious symbols, its agricultural infrastructure, things like that. But in plague 6, something changes, and the judgment becomes, we could say, embodied. It becomes very personal. It moves from the external world into human skin. That's right, boils, festering sores. And these come from the most symbolic source imaginable. I think you'll really like this. I find this very intriguing, that Moses takes handfuls of soot from a kiln, a furnace, and he throws it into the air right before Pharaoh. At that moment, it becomes fine dust, and it falls across all of Egypt, and it produces festering boils on people and animals alike. You'll see this in Exodus 9, 8 to 12, like I mentioned. It's very clear and very plain spoken there. Now, here's what I find intriguing is that the kiln is not incidental. In Deuteronomy 4:20, Moses describes Egypt itself as, here's the quote, "the iron furnace." In other words, it's a reference to the brick kilns in which Israelite slaves labored for generations. Remember, they had to make the bricks. Their quota increased the minute Moses stepped foot into Pharaoh, and he made things worse for a while. So this is all part of that time period in which they really were enduring oppression and slavery and tremendous pressure regarding their workload. And so the furnace is the symbol of Israel's oppression in that sense. It's the image of their suffering, their forced labor. And now Yahweh takes the soot of the oppressor's kiln, and he turns it into a weapon against the oppressors themselves. I mean, you see the very instrument of Israel's enslavement now becoming the source of Egypt's affliction. This is a profound and deliberate sense of justice, because what was once used to break a people, it's now used against those who wielded it. It's much like the verse that says, "You dig a pit, you fall into it." This is happening now to the Egyptians. The magicians, of course, they're already disgraced in plague 3. Remember plague 3, the gnats, and how it produced such an uncleanness? Well, now they're covered in boils, so they cannot even appear before Moses. I mean, they cannot stand in front of their own deities, much less in front of Moses. It's beyond unclean. It's now probably unbearable. Now, regarding the little g god that this plague takes aim at, that goddess's name is Sekhmet. She was the lioness-headed goddess believed to cause and control plagues and disease. That was her realm. And a second god that this play was aimed at was Imhotep. This god was the deity that was kind of the physician of ancient Egypt. This little g god was revered for his healing wisdom, medical knowledge. And so these two little g gods, these false deities, no doubt were humbled and took back seat to plague six because they both end up powerless. I mean, when the dust falls, there's no incantation, there's no ritual, there's no medical papyrus that can halt it. The bodies in Egypt and the bodies of their religious establishment, the very people whose job was to mediate between humanity and these little g gods, these false deities, they're all covered in open sores that can't be healed, that can't be stopped. The little g gods, those two, Sekhmet and Imhotep, they're incapable of doing anything about the boils. And so the theological point here, coming out of the historical point, is pretty obvious and pretty blunt. I mean, the body is not autonomous. We are not our own. We actually belong to God. We are created by Him. The sovereignty of Yahweh extends, yes, beyond rivers and landscapes and agricultural systems. It actually reaches the cellular level. Your body was made by God, and it belongs to God. And to those who are believers, we belong to God twice. We've been created by Him, and we've been redeemed by Him. And so when you think about this, you realize that this plague shows that God owns all of us. This plague reaches the skin of the most powerful people in the world's most powerful civilization at that time. Now, there's also something about this plague that's unique, in that this is the first plague in which we are explicitly told that Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart. You'll notice that at the end there in verses 11 and 12. It's the first time we've seen it worded that way. Now, admittedly, this statement has generated enormous theological discussion. Many folks have debated it, tried to explain it. I'll probably join the ranks of those in this simple explanation as well. But just know this, the text does not present Yahweh as overriding a willing heart. That's not what's happening here. What's being presented is Yahweh confirming what Pharaoh's heart has already chosen again and again and again. In fact, again and again, five times. Five previous opportunities where he could have repented. He didn't. He remained hardened. And now it seems like in this text, Yahweh, God, is confirming and responding to what is already existing. So very similar in that pattern, but here it's worded very blatantly and expressing Yahweh's action. Now, just one more application. I think this play points us to something that we have to all admit. And it does, again, relate to the idea of autonomy and the myth that's involved in that. Because we live in an era of extraordinary medical capability. And in many ways, that's fantastic. We're very thankful for that. The medical industry, they can sequence genomes, transplant organs, defeat diseases that a century ago would have killed millions. I mean, the lifespan is larger than it has ever been. And we should celebrate this. Like I said, medicine, it's a gift of God. It's a real beautiful thing. It's a good thing that God has enabled people with skill and intelligence to do incredibly minute surgeries and detailed things in and with the body. The creativity and compassion that medicine gives, it's beautiful. But we must remember this as well, that medical mastery is not the same as sovereignty over the body. Medicine's ability to work with our body does not mean that they own the body, that they can raise it or fix everything permanently. Now, the body belongs to God, and this is why I'm not a real fan of the word autonomy or bodily autonomy. I understand in some ways that there may be a right sense to that when it comes to maybe horizontal relationships, perhaps, but vertically, divinely, the Bible is clear, especially about believers, that We are not our own. We have been bought with a price. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. We belong to God in every way imaginable, body, soul, and spirit. And so regardless of what the medical world says or how well it does its job to extending life and to curing disease and to healing illnesses, it can never own the body. That is God's responsibility. That is God's right. He owns us. You know, the COVID-19 pandemic, it's a striking contemporary illustration to, I think, what happened here with the plague of boils. Think about it. A microscopic agent moved through a globalized world, and it overwhelmed healthcare systems. It stopped entire cities and even countries in their tracks. It humbled even the most technologically advanced nations on earth. All of our little g gods in the medical world, for all their wisdom and ability, they could not stop the soot of that pandemic, to use the word from Exodus, which shows us something. The body is not ultimately ours. And this is not a message of despair, but it's really a message of reorientation, of release. And instead of saying that we are autonomous and that we own ourselves, every person, and like I said, especially every believer, should instead say, the one who made us owns us, and he governs our body. Now, this plague does end without negotiation. I mean, actually, there's nothing to negotiate. Pharaoh is silent. He's afflicted. He's covered in boils. His magicians are. His leaders are. The people are. The animals are. And while the boils are burning, his heart is hardening. But the scale is about to change. I mean, we've had water plagues, biological plagues, agricultural plagues, and now skin plagues. On the next episode, the sky itself enters the courtroom. I'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.